This is fun! The FU Network.
For he's a jolly good fellow. For he's a jolly good fellow. For he's a jolly good fellow. Let's all say on the bus.
Hello and welcome to Mensplaining. I'm your host for this week, Ed the Sock. And joining me this week, Hafiz Nirani, Aaron Seal, Andrew Willis. We'll get to them in a minute. But, you know, we decided this week, or actually Hafiz decided this week, since he's a producer, that just about every podcast now and every news broadcast and everywhere you turn is all about COVID-19. And we think maybe people are starting to get a little tired of hearing about COVID-19. Maybe they're tired of talking about it. Maybe they're just tired of it absorbing their entire existence. So why don't we do some counter programming and do a show that has nothing to do with COVID-19? It's just a show that this is our sort of our pet peeves show, where we sort of open up our little drawers, where, you know, mental drawers where we keep our pet peeves and share them with each other. Some of them will be specifically related to a male experience. Others will be general experience. But that's what we're going to do. So if you thought, hell no, they're going to talk about COVID again. No, we're not. Okay. So let's go to Hafiz Nirani, who's from Vancouver, a digital marketing specialist and analyst. Thank you, and producer of this little program here. Hello, Hafiz.
Hello, Ed. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. It's a beautiful, sunny morning here in Vancouver, and I'm on a show with all you wonderful people, so can't go wrong.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Rogers. Okay, Aaron Seal.
Hello, sir.
How are you doing?
I was, as of a half hour ago, irritable and constipated, but I am pleased to report the latter issue has resolved, so now I'm just irritable.
Oh, wow. Did it, yeah, because constipation can make somebody more irritable, I think, than the runs.
Yes, it can. It's very, yeah, very unpleasant, especially if it stretches out over days, but in seclusion and eating too much meat, this will happen. But
you need more fiber in your diet.
Yeah, Metamucil helps.
Yeah, you got that relief of when it finally evacuates and you hear that magical sound of the turd hitting the water that you've been waiting to get rid of for days.
Flush.
Yeah. Oh yeah, until you try and flush. Or at least you're not using cut up t-shirts as toilet paper and thinking that'll flush.
No, I hadn't had that thought.
Okay. And you're Ottawa, just outside Ottawa?
Yes, I'm writing this out with my parents, which is causing a whole lot of fun and games. But it's nice to reconnect with the parents as an adult, because you get to see behaviors in a different light and you get to understand things that you didn't understand as a kid. But yeah, I'm writing this out with them for as long as this goes, and we'll see how this lasts.
The other good thing about it is eventually you get to leave and go somewhere else.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that.
You make your own rules. Yeah, okay. Andy Willis of Andy Land
Radio.
Hey! How are you,
How's
Andy?
How's it going?
I'm fine. You?
Excited as always.
Okay, good.
Anthony, what kind of coffee do you drink in the morning that gets you this fucking buzzed?
You know what? I don't have any at all.
Is it coffee with the other, like, fine Colombian exports, including whiskey, or, like?
I mean, nothing up my nose, nothing down my lungs, except for cigarettes, and that's about it. But I've been good, actually, this week. I've only smoked, like, you know, two cartons, so we're doing good. We're doing good.
I'd rather you smoke the cardboard cartons than smoke the cigarettes.
No, I'm joking. We're down to two a day. I'm limiting myself to two a day, and then next week we're going to go to zero.
Well, maybe next week go one a day, half the week, and then go to zero.
Okay, I'll try that.
There's nothing worse than telling your body, I'm going to kind of cut it off completely, because then your mind goes crazy. It's true. It's smoking cessation often, and like anything else, do it in stages, because when you try to do cold turkey, it occupies your mind so much that you're thinking about it more than you should. So take my advice. All right. Not that I've stopped smoking cigars in 30 years.
It sounds like you have.
All right. So today we're going to talk about pet peeves. Has everybody got their little pet peeves lined up?
Oh, I've had this list for years.
Oh, okay. Oh, good. I'm looking forward to that. I will start off with hot air hand dryers in public bathrooms.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Because, first of all, they are not saving the environment any more than paper towels were, because it's just a different way of disturbing the environment. Okay, because there's different practices used for disposal of hand towels than there is for the generation of electricity that's needed to power up the hand dryers. The problem is that when you go in to wash your face, you're in the summer, you're hot, you go put cold water on your face, or you just want to wake yourself up, throw some water on your face, or for some reason you're dirty, you want to wash your face, go try drying your face off in a hot air hand dryer. First of all, some of them do turn so you can turn it upwards, so you just look like a moron standing there, and your chin gets really hot, and the rest of you barely gets dried off. But a
wait,
lot of
you
them
actually
even...
dry your face in one of those things? I don't think I've ever heard anyone actually turn it up and dry their face on those.
I've tried it, and then for science, I did it, and then but most are affixed downwards, so you bend down and try to put your face underneath the thing, and then people walk in and look at you, and they know exactly what you're doing and why. But they still think you look like an idiot. So these hot air hand dryers, they actually do not serve, they don't serve the purpose of patrons who are using public bathrooms. And let's face it, if someone's using a public bathroom, it's only because they have to, because they can't wait till they get home.
And they're not more hygienic either. They're like those Dyson Airblade ones, you've seen those ones, right? Like the fucking fancy one. Or you had to put your hand, both hands in, and you pull them up, and you feel these air blades. And then you see all this water, and it just collects at the bottom in this, like, dirt trough or whatever. And apparently, whenever the air blows, you're actually getting everyone else's germs back up at you. So everyone else that's washed their butt has now shook your hands, and you've... Ugh.
This is what drives me crazy about... the attempt to be more green and environmentally sensitive is that most people don't realize that a lot of those solutions aren't solutions. It's just moving the deck chairs on the Titanic. But they think that somehow, because there's been a change, that this is somehow more green. It's more of an environmentally friendly solution, when in fact, no, it's just another environmentally unfriendly solution. But people don't want to know that. People want to think that they're actually doing something. People want to, on Earth Hour, turn off their lights for some reason for an hour and use candles, and think, oh, wow, I've just saved the Earth. Because environmental degradation is so huge, the average person feels like, what the hell can I do? And the truth is, individually, probably nothing. Collectively is made up of individuals, you can probably do something. But it just seems like it's one of those world problems that seems so freaking huge that we create these placebos so that people think that they're doing something. They think that sending $5 a month to Sally Struthers is curing world poverty. Like, it's just these placebos that we fool ourselves with, that we're actually doing good. And we want an attaboy pat on the back, when in fact, if we did any investigation, we'd realize we're not doing anything any better than we were doing before. All it is just mass hypnosis. All right, what do you think about the? Anybody else have comments on this, Aaron?
You just knocked one off my list. I was going to talk about scams and brand loyalty and marketing, and you are 100% correct. These are artificial perceptions. Most of these things don't work, whether it's on environmental solutions or personal health. Like the marketing that we do in the 21st century to make people believe that things that have relatively no value, or in some cases no value whatsoever, are essential purposes, like we're driving ourselves nuts. And I know we're trying to stay off the current events, but like I see the scams, especially from evangelists. Like you see these silver solution type things where you get vulnerable populations to believe that you have a magic cure for everything that's going on if only you send a check for some inflated amount, and this stuff has no value, scientific worth, or anything of the kind. But people allow themselves to get deceived because, as you say, these are real problems and they're looking for solutions, and whether or not it's actually a solution, they're willing to pay for it. So it just frustrates me, whether it's on brand loyalty or whether it's on placebos or anything like this, that people just take advantage of the vulnerable in these ways?
Well, you know, that's a double-edged sword, because the people who are being taken advantage of are begging to be taken advantage of.
That's true, too.
Listen, I think in the back of their head, they know that they order something from this charlatan televangelist that's supposed to chase away the devil or chase away diseases. I think they know that it's just a bunch of bullshit, but they do it because somewhere it'll make them feel a little bit better. They figure that part of the brain that is somewhat believing of this will eventually take over the majority of the brain, you know, into the amygdala, and start convincing them that this whatever piece of crap they're selling now is actually gonna save them from anything and in line with anything at all that Jesus taught.
Well, you know,
Jesus was not a televangelist, although he was an evangelist, but I don't recall him ever having anything mail order.
What if we got our own product? Like put something on the FU network, like a magic cream of some sort, and we completely admit that, you know, it has no medical proof, but there's magic in there.
Well, you know what? Years ago, when I was just before I my show was ending at City TV, when the new owners, we were about to launch a product line called Smartass, we had Smartass University sweatshirts and stuff. I still have some. We were going to launch Smartass Water. We were actually sourcing out where to get bottled water where we can just change, you know, they would put the labels on for us. And if you read the print on the bottle, it said, this water comes to you from the tap, like virtually every other water, because it's safe and clean. But now you feel smarter and better because you paid money for water you could have got out of the tap.
We need new products. What if we came up with Smartass ass cream, the cream that you rub on your ass, and it makes you smarter?
Who wants a smart ass? You want to have a conversation with your ass? I mean, I know Aaron in this past week might have liked to have had a conversation.
You put on, and we say that if you put this cream on, your IQ points are going to jump by 20.
Ah. What I wanted to do was market moron candles, which are candles that if you light them, they'll keep morons away. Like votive candles. You know,
I wonder if we can get a few moron candles. And then
we actually looked into it. It's and then we sort of stopped for a bit. I don't know why, but got to pick that back up. It's anti-moron candles. Put one on your desk, and you don't even have to light it. Just have it on your desk, and it will repel morons. We sell it to people who have full knowledge that this will not repel morons, but it's more of a unity thing and more of a message.
Well, I'll tell you, I had one workplace where one of my coworkers used his flatulence strategically. So if he was in a room with a moron and he wanted the moron to leave, he would just let it fly, and wouldn't you know it, the moron would be gone. So there are practical solutions to the problem.
Well, that's amazing that he had that kind of, like, he had, like, his flatulence banked and ready to go for like a safe deposit box of flatulence, that he knew when to open it and let it out.
He was a very strategic man. He was evil, but he was strategic.
Well, that's almost superhero level powers. That's almost X-Men level powers, that you could control when and the intensity you're going to release flatulence. Andy, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know what? I was trying really hard. I was racking my brain for the last week, trying to figure out something that pissed me off. And you know what? Yesterday, I figured it out. I was watching a movie about a nice little jaunt in the countryside in, you know, the early 20th century, 1917, one of the, you know, the most relaxing, soothing movies to watch. Has anyone watched it?
Well, right. Yeah. Before the stock market crash. Yeah. No. What's it called?
1917. It's the war movie about.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Is that an American or a Canadian one?
I think it's English, to be honest. But
it's definitely right. About Brits. But I mean, it almost won an Oscar and whatnot. It was like
it won three Oscars.
Yeah. Oh, it almost won Best Picture. It's basically Saving Private Ryan, but like World War One.
It's okay. It is fucking phenomenal. So I'm sitting there watching it. Second of all, my great grandmother is 92 years old, 93. I can't even remember. And I'm like watching 1917 and I'm like, oh my God, you were born 10 years after the First World War. That's crazy. So I'm watching this movie. This guy's like has a letter he has to give to a certain general. He's flying through bombs, shell shock, everything. It's the most tremendous acting ever. And immediately I got really angry because it reminded me of when I was in art school about 10 years ago for a year. I dropped out. It fucking sucked. But I was there and I remember like half the kids around Remembrance Day would ask me like, why are you wearing a Remembrance Day poppy? And I was like, well, why not? And they were like, ugh, like, I don't wear poppy because, you know, I don't support like the war. I don't want to remember like violence and like, you know, people profiteering off of death. And I honestly could have ripped off some of those people's heads because I was like, you know, what the hell? So that's my pet peeve is if you wear Remembrance Day poppy, fine. If you don't, I don't care. But don't look at the war as something to, you know, whatever. To think about these people who've died, you know what I mean? And that movie, I'm telling you right now, I watched it. I got PTSD just watching that fucking movie. And right. Lots of respect.
It's
yeah.
Scary.
All right. Thank you, Don Cherry.
I was like, Don Cherry, that's totally different. That's just saying like, you know, like something way different than what I'm saying. What I'm saying is like,
he's
the war is
going
the war.
Art students. Come on. Hey, he's going after those
hey,
types of people that say,
I wear poppies. I think I wear about 6 poppies every year because 30 seconds after I buy it and put it on, it falls off and disappears. But people don't understand. Remembrance Day. Remembrance Day is to remember those soldiers who fought and died so that you could make an asinine statement about how I don't support the war and I don't support what soldiers do. And you know what? Just because you're allowed to say that because they went out and sacrificed. You spoiled sack of shit.
Well, yeah. That's the thing. Watching like these people, like, I mean, like you really understand, like, I mean, that's why the movie is really good. You should watch it. But anyways, so yeah, if you don't like that, you're a real me's kite and whatever. I don't want to talk to you. And then the second thing that really drives me up the wall is people who ignore really shitty situations in the workplace or really bad ideas and they don't intervene or stop or do anything. They just stick their head in the sand. That shit drives me up the wall.
Wait, I cannot. You have the power to do something, or just
and they don't
just pee on.
No. Well, I mean, look. I mean, if you're the fucking mail clerk, I mean, you know, fuck off. I don't want to hear it. But like, I mean, unless you actually got something good to say, I mean, I'm down for anything. But I'm talking about people who are like, you know, actually have power and control, and they don't do shit. And you're just like, oh my God, the writing is on the wall. But they defend their shitty ideas to the death.
Well, because if they don't, it's self-preservation, man. If someone else has a better idea than them, then that person gets attention, and that person may get this person's job. It's all cover, all these things, all executive positions, all middle management, all they care about is covering their ass. The actual product they deliver or service couldn't give a shit. They only in the way that it covers their ass. They no longer give a shit about the customer.
Well, okay, and so that's the thing. So this is my Mies Kite list, and that's another person that's on there is someone who is, you know, I mean, like, I live by the sword, I die by the sword. So it's like, you know, if I have a really good idea and it turns to shit, I have no problem saying, hey, this is not working, we need to find a different solution and let's pivot. But when people don't do that and they don't have the confidence to do that, then they just stick behind a really lame idea and it just, like, it drives down morale and it fucking sucks. So I mean,
listen,
I don't know.
I was part of a team at a broadcaster where I was asked to consult to try to improve the quality of the show. They'd have meetings once a week. And they'd say, okay, who's got ideas? Who's got ideas? And people would put their hands up with ideas. And then the management would just shit all over them. It was like volcanoes.
The writer's room, though, isn't it? Like, I don't know.
Writer's rooms are notoriously vicious, and you know that that's going to happen. But this wasn't a writer's room. This was all staff, because they said anybody could have a good idea. No one has a monopoly on a good idea. So who has an idea? And people, they put up their hands, and rather than saying, okay, there's elements of that idea that I can see working, because they want to see how we can build on it or whatever, they just would humiliate the person. And then eventually nobody said anything. And then they said, why are people not coming with suggestions? Why are they not coming with suggestions? And I finally had to say to them, because you are assholes and no one wants to throw themselves on the spikes in front of the assholes. You have to, if you want ideas, they don't spring out fully formed. This is supposed to be a brainstorming session. So don't shit on them every time they open their mouth. And they said, I was dead wrong. And I didn't know what I was talking about, and then quietly went about asking people things. And then the next meeting was very, very different. And then I eventually told them that their meetings were a complete waste of time because it was taking people away from doing actual work. And if they have new ideas, they'll apply them in their actual job task. And sure. They told me that I was dead wrong and I don't know what I'm talking about. But then we never had another meeting.
Jeez,
so please. I was like Norma Ray for the workplace.
Oh my God.
And you're bringing up a real problem. And like when I was in business school, they cover this a lot, which is the whole concept of asking people, what are your ideas? Let's have your ideas. Like it doesn't lead to effective brainstorming. There are much more effective ways to do this.
But it can make it worse.
Oh, it makes it worse because not get a brainstorm, you don't get a drop of rain. It's a desert.
Well, and in my opinion, what it does is it also empowers really stupid people to feel like they have a stake in the decision.
There's actually a way that you can get past this too. I used to have a boss and he's like, don't give me the reasons why we can't do it. Tell me how we can get to doing it. As in, okay, no, oh no, this won't work because of such and such. Well, how do we get past that so we can make it work? Usually I think a lot of people kibosh ideas for one small, simple thing that, you know, it's not a hindering block that you can't get around. It's something that you can either actually move or get around.
Your boss was a good boss. Because
he influenced me quite a bit. When I was
don't really come young. To me. I've said this before. Don't just come to me and tell me something won't work. Tell me why it won't work and give me a suggestion as how you think it might be able to work. Give me some. Don't just say, nah, that's not going to work, because people do that to try to sound smarter, because, you know, there's a million reasons why something won't work. And sometimes only one reason why it will, which is that you can see how to execute this, and you're not able to transfer that frame of reference to these fucking pieces of driftwood who sit in chairs. So that's a positive way. It's like, okay, this isn't going to work, but it's a noble goal. How do we get this to work? That makes sense. That's productive. And there are very few of those people out there. All they care about, there's a protective cadre of people in middle management and a little bit higher, where none of them call each other on how bad they are. Because if you call person B on how bad they are, person B may call you on how bad you are, and then it all unravels. So everyone just, they're all just, it's like group covering your ass is what it is. And you get no productivity. I know a guy worked in two broadcasters, and he was given, a young guy, was given advice by older guys who've been there for years, two separate guys, two separate broadcasters, was told, just be mediocre. Just do your job to the letter of you're supposed to do, nothing more. Don't offer suggestions, because if you put the spotlight on you, then you're the one who all the attention goes to. And if your idea
sounds like Canadian media.
Yeah. If your idea doesn't work, you get all the blame. And also there's people who are like, you can propose that idea, but that means more work for all of us. So can you just not do it? You know what I mean? Cause they're like,
I'd fire that person.
I hate those people. I honestly do. It's like, why would you do that? You made us all now have to do more work. Yeah, because I care about my job and making sure that it's
around. You know what? That person sounds like someone who hides in their office who's like 6 years old and is just counting the days to retirement, and they don't want to, like, you know, that's what it sounds like to me.
Well, speaking of hiding in office, this is another pet peeve of mine. At one of these broadcasters, there was a guy who would come in at 7 o'clock in the morning and not leave till 7 o'clock at night. And his boss was convinced that was because he was so busy and he had so much to do that he had to put all in all those extra hours. Now, two things. An effective manager would say, why can't you get your job done effectively in the proper working hours? Obviously, you're not particularly good at what you do. Secondly, spending a lot of time there doesn't mean you're doing, like, because quite frankly, no one could figure out what this fucker actually did. He made work for himself, and he put work on other people so that he could then go and say he was supervising their work. He didn't do shit. He was just avoiding being at home. But, you know, it's like, oh, you know, putting in endless hours, that means that person is really dedicated. No, sometimes it does mean that, if they're productive. But if they're putting in endless hours and their productivity is no great shakes, it just means they're not capable of doing their job in the reasonable amount of time that is a work day.
Some people are just professional button pushers and screen watchers.
Knew it. What was that, Hafiz?
Some people are just professional button pushers and screen watchers, and like their only specialty is warming a seat for 7 hours a day.
Yeah, well, and he was lucky that his boss was a complete idiot. One of those people who didn't care if the person being blamed for the problem was the actual person who should carry the blame for the problem. She just cared that somebody could be blamed for the problem. Oh. And so problems were not solved because she would put the blame on somebody who actually had nothing to do with the circumstance whatsoever, but she felt comfortable because somebody was to blame. Like, these are geniuses. This is, you wonder why, and then, you know, my experiences are in Canadian media. So you wonder why Canadian media is in the shitter? It's because it's run by people with fucking common sense whatsoever. No management skills. And, you know, just because somebody has sat in a certain position for a number of years and been successful at that position doesn't mean that you should promote them, because they may not be good at the next position. They were good at what they did, but those skills may not be transferable to the next level. And so you just promote them because they've been there a certain length of time, and you get people who are in way over their head. And then you get people who, because nowadays everything is based on the next quarter, the next quarter, the next quarter. Used to be businesses had a vision that would, you know, like, that's why the Japanese kick our ass in so many things. They have long-term vision. In North America, it's all shareholders, next quarter. And you have to deliver. And you can't create or affect any long-term vision, which is going to have some downturns. And so because the people at the top are afraid of the next quarter, they hire people. The person that they hire as their second in command is less smart than they are. Not somebody who they can mentor to eventually take over, like used to be the case. They hire somebody who doesn't threaten them because they're not as good. And then that person hires someone below them who is not as smart as them and not as good. And then that person hires someone under them who is not as smart and not as good. And eventually you wind up with, Cro-Magnons. But the thing is, the people at the top eventually retire or leave or move, and everybody moves up a step. So what's happening is every step, morons are moving up higher and higher. And as the bottom gets filled, it's getting filled with people who are even stupider than the people who were at the bottom before. And that is why corporate America and corporate Canada is in the shitter, is because people are too focused on the next quarter. They don't have any vision that goes beyond that. They've got shareholders who are greedy fucks who want their dividends now. You know, there's no sense of vision on how to build the company, which is going to require some experimentation, some success, some failure until you get to where you're going to be. And sometimes it requires taking a write down in order to build up. But no.
Have you seen Ford versus Ferrari?
Yeah, I saw Ford versus Ferrari.
I think that movie outlines that perfectly.
It was a great movie. I would recommend, and I'm not a car guy, but I would recommend anyone who can see it. It's available now on the various services. Watch it. It wasn't great. The advertising campaign for it wasn't great. It didn't make it seem like what it was, which is really a good story of human rivalry and stupidity and corporate greed and arrogance. Like, it was, it had great drama to it, but it was based on a real story and real people. But I went to see it and was very gladly surprised that it was a damn good movie. But yes, it does look at incompetence and how people just want people around them. You know, I've been to places where they say, you know, we don't want yes men. We want people who are going to challenge us. We don't want yes men. And I eventually went to the person and said, what you mean by you don't want yes men is you don't want people who will even open their mouths to say yes. You want everyone to just keep their mouths shut. Because you know what? If you run a place that doesn't need where you don't want yes men, you demonstrate that in how you lead. You don't just make a statement, we don't want yes men. When people say we don't want yes men, They just want yes men. Yeah, exactly. All right, other pet peeves.
In politics, it's the same thing. It's not just a corporate reality. Like, if you look on Parliament Hill and you ask, why are politicians so stupid? It's because the politicians who rise through the chains aren't the ones who can contribute. It's the ones who are willing to play within the institution and play by the rules. And
you
not
know all about this.
Yeah.
You just went through this.
I went through this and I lived it as staff for 10 years. Like, you look at these jokers on the front lines who read the speeches who are given to them and who are then celebrated for how wise they are. No, they're celebrated because they're willing to read the speech they were given, and they got lucky because whoever wrote the speech was good. And the ones who get the bad speech writers, because among other reasons, as Ed just said, they want the people supporting them who aren't going to challenge them, they get what they deserve. And those people then get promoted because they put in the time and they frankly kissed the right asses, and therefore they're next in line. And the only ones who succeed and who really do a good job are the ones who break free from the chain and who stake out their own staff and who are lucky enough to get the chance to be recognized. But whether it's in corporate or in politics or in any other organizational setting, this is when organizations disintegrate. It's when it becomes about playing by the rules and not causing waves rather than contributing.
Yeah, listen, I used to, when I was on the air at Much Music, and this requires a company, first of all, and senior management that is good and secure in their jobs. But I would be live on the air, and they'd hand me something to read, like a public service announcement or a promotion that Much Music was doing with a shampoo brand or something. And then I would read it and say, I'm not reading this. First of all, it's extremely poorly written. The grammar's awful. Secondly, I will not prostitute myself like this. Or they were supporting causes that I thought were wrong. I would then direct the crew to call the vice president during dinner, because my show was on during dinner, live, with no warning. All he got was, Ed wants to talk to you on the air. And I would go on the, and he'd say, all right. And on the air, I would explain my complaints with
it's fucking gold.
And
I love that.
And, but you know, you need a management that's willing to take that. And you know what? He would take it under consideration and often make the changes that I suggested. But I was right there in front of the nation calling someone who was ostensibly my boss, telling him that I wasn't going to do what it is he wanted me to do because it was stupid, and the idea traces back to his office and it's dumb. Think of something better. And he took it. But there's you're not going to get that in broadcasting today. People just keep their heads down and hope no one notices they still work there, because if they notice, they'll get laid off. It's like, what,
I don't think audiences know they still work there, too.
No, they say, what, we still have staff here? Human staff? Fire that person. Okay, let's move on to other pet peeves. Hafiz.
My pet peeve?
Another one.
You know what? I was thinking of this, and there's two that I came up with, and they're not really that related at all. One is people who drive slow in the fucking fast lane. You know, if you, anyone that drives on a highway, you're zooming along, and all of a sudden there's some asshole that has no cars in front of them that's in the left lane doing like 5 kilometers below the speed limit. And meanwhile, he's going at the same speed as the car to the right of him, and he's in the passing lane. And I don't know about you guys, but it drives me fucking wild.
Now, is he driving the actual speed limit, or below?
Usually
it?
Below. Below.
Okay, and yeah, there's no one
in BC, no one drives a speed limit. Everyone drives 10 above.
Well, yeah, because 10 above, if you get a ticket, it's no points. Which reminds me, I have a court appearance for a ticket I have to deal with.
Are you going as Ed?
You have to remind me. You reminded me I have to deal. I don't know what they're doing during this period, if they're actually having people come into to court or not during this time. It doesn't seem like a good place to mask people. Anyway.
Where's Paul Doroshenko?
Yeah, let's call Paul and ask him what's going on. Okay, and your second one that's not related, Hafiz?
Paper straws. I fucking hate them.
Because they collapse before you're finished drinking the thing you're drinking.
Yes, they turn into the part of the drink. Like
mush.
They mush up. They collapse on you, and like you know what, they're great if you're the type that is going to just drink your entire drink in 5 seconds the first minute. But if you're like a normal person that sips his drink throughout a meal, you're not gonna finish that drink before that straw is turned into a complete shit.
That's why you have to always ask for two or three straws in places you
No,
know.
You get a plastic straw. What's wrong with plastic straws?
Plastic straws, the problem is that birds who are stupid, they wind up in landfills, and birds start chewing them and swallowing them, and birds can't regurgitate, so they choke to death. And that's why, okay? It's because of stupid birds. Listen, you know what? When I have plastic straws at home, or plastic tabs and things, I just cut them up into really small pieces and throw them out. But most people won't go to
that. There's practical solutions that you don't need to create a stupid ban for that
Well, but
are
come
out
on.
There.
You know that most people aren't going to take the time to cut up the damn straw. Most people aren't going to give a shit. So they come up with this semi-solution of this disposable, biodegradable straw. But it degrades too fast. It shouldn't degrade as I'm drinking it.
A biodegradable plastic straw does exist out there too. It seems to me that we pick all these solutions. They're actually regressive rather than a step forward.
It's placebos, like we talked about.
Yeah. And you know what? They're feel-good things so that, the mayor of Vancouver can feel good and say he's done something green instead of, being seen as a complete piece of shit, which he is, the liberals can say, oh, look, we're going to save the environment by banning straws all across Canada. But look, I go places like fast food places and they still haven't switched. You know why? Because they fucking suck.
All right. Thank you. Andy, you were going to weigh in, were you, or was it Aaron?
Yeah. I you know what? In terms of professional vision, Harvey fucking Weinstein, I have to say, I was watching this documentary about him. And one thing he said that kind of goes back to what you're saying was that he was like, you know what? We don't give a fuck if we don't make any profit next month or next quarter, or if next year we do better or worse. He's like, because we're not owned by a studio. We just make good pictures, and if they profit, they profit. If they don't, they don't. I don't care. And that's kind of goes into, I think the whole idea about being a disruptor, and I really like people like that. So that's something.
If only people who weren't sexual abusers could carry that on.
That's the thing, because you have to be somewhat sociopathic in order to be that, into what you do. And then that comes with its own responsibilities, like not fucking raping people. But,
Go
on, Hafiz. Hafiz?
Sorry. I'm going to say, I don't need to rape people to have a positive, mentality of how my business should go.
No.
That's forward thinking. You don't need to be a rapist to be a forward thinker. In terms of,
I was never implying that you have to be a rapist in order to be a good anything. Maybe that's something I'm pissed off about. It's like people have really good paths. They have really good, moments in their lives. That it doesn't mean that they're a great person just because they had a few good things going for them. But it shouldn't mean that we can't look at it as a case study for how to be. Anyone who knows me knows that I'm obsessed with show business and I love the business. I don't really care too much about the show. I like the business. And there's a really great book called Powerhouse, and it's all about creative artist agency and Michael Ovitz and Michael Rosenfeld, who started CAA, because William Morris was the big agency representing everyone. And they said, look, these guys don't know how the fuck to run anything, but because they're the only agency for the last 100 years, you know, they have authority on everything, so they can afford to be complacent. So they said, fuck it, we're leaving. So they leave, and then they end up being as big as they are now, representing everyone. They're dwarf.
And doing exactly what left the other company for. Read George Orwell's Animal Farm. That'll tell you all you need to know about the world.
Yeah. Well, but and so then that goes into politics. I think that's the reason why, you know, the shit happens that it happens in government, because government's never going to fail. It's always going to be around. No one's going to, you know, overthrow it or change it or do anything different to it. So it can still be the same old bullshit. So I think the thing is like, you know, are you a disruptor? Are you not? If you're not a disruptor, get the fuck out of my way. I don't want to have anything to do with you. You're going to be very boring, and, you know, you're not going to get the shit done, which then goes into my second biggest
Well, hang on a second. Before you go into that, I get tired of hearing about disruptors. This whole thing, disruptors, changing the system, disruptors. There are some things which disrupt the system, but that word means nothing. Because you know what? Sometimes systems shouldn't be disrupted that way. Sometimes they're just shit disturbers. No. Anyway,
yeah, but
on.
if you're a producer and you're sitting there pitching about another series around five women who like all hate each other, and it's like 2020 and it's been like, you know, a decade and a half of the same programming, I'm going to be like, you're not a disruptor in television. You're just the same mediocre, let's copy it seven different ways producer. And that shit pisses me off. So I think like a good producer is also a really great disruptor. It doesn't mean you have to be disruptive in the work environment like Harvey Weinstein. Now, here is my other pet peeve that I just thought about now is rich kids. I cannot stand rich kids who, one, pretend to be poor, and two, have to work with me, and they look at me with wonder and amazement as how I get stuff done, and I have to somehow explain to them, hey, here's the deal. I have everything to lose because I don't have a career in front of me. I have to build one. I have to make one. Whereas with you, you know, you don't have to really make a career if you really don't want to. You can just kind of like float around. So I don't know. I'd rather hire the kid from Fuckhole, Utah, who like, you know, has a really good work ethic and does their shit, than someone who like graduated from the best school. And when you ask them, what did you do in the last 4 years at school? They're like, well, I went to school. And you're like, yeah, but that's not a thing. That's just like, great, you showed up to school. But like, what's your passion? What's your drive? What do you really want to fucking do?
Not everybody has a passion and drive, and that we need generals and we need soldiers too. But, and you know what, don't, when you're blaming rich kids, blame their parents, because rich kids don't pop out of pods fully formed. They come from shitty parents.
Well, I mean, I came from shitty parents too. You know, my mom's, you know, on welfare her whole life. You know, my dad, God knows where the hell he was, you know? So, I mean, like, you know, everyone comes from shit backgrounds, or like, you know, people beating each other, lots of crazy wild stuff. But I mean, if you're just fucking lazy, or like everything's just provided for you, I mean, like, you're going to be a real
shock. But if everything's
shock.
Provided for you, that's the parents who are doing the providing. Granted, well, there is some people have internal character, internal drives and so on. But there's, you know, whenever you hear one generation complaining about the next generation down, it's like, well, who the hell do you think raised them? Shut up.
Yeah.
Aaron,
that's why
I'm not having kids.
I'm not having kids because my kids would just be fucked up. I'm sure they'd just be like, I'd be like that insane parent that'd be like, you're not getting a fucking allowance, you're gonna work at 14.
Yeah, you know what, Aaron, Andrew, the best parents in my experience have always been the people who said they weren't gonna be parents because they didn't think they could be good parents. The people wind up being pretty good parents.
I think I'd be a good dad.
Yeah, I think it would be too, and amusing too. Aaron, another pet peeve. Have you one?
I'm just taking notes based on all of this because I'm kind of tempted to interject constantly. But like we were talking about disruptors, and it just provokes the memory for me. Like there are real disruptors. There are people who actually know what changes need to be evoked and know how to do it. But like I get incredibly frustrated by people who use words like disruptor, or it feels like 5 years ago it was trusted advisor. People who drop these words as taglines. They don't know what they mean, but they expect credibility. And then we afford them the right to influence things, and they have no idea what they're doing. They make things worse. So
I got something to say about that.
All right, say it.
Yeah, please.
Let, Go ahead.
Well, see, the thing is, I feel like I take full ownership over the term disruptor, and I fucking get what it means to be one. Because, you know, in the most mediocre environments like higher education or throughout high school, I've always been called disruptive. And, you know, I've always had that kind of be applied as like a bad term to have. And really when it came down to it, I reflect, I'm like, no, every fucking thing I did was disruptive because it caused people to think and to talk and to discuss. Not talking about actions, but talking about work, good work. Work that shocks and changes people's ideas, and you know, so that I think I own that word disruptor like a fucking badge of honor.
Well, you're
there's
more
the opposite to that too, which is like if on Parliament Hill right now there's a debate about e-parliament because there are a bunch of people in the current environment, it's necessary to a certain extent, but there are a lot of sort of loyalists and traditionalists who say under no circumstances should Parliament go electronic. But if you listen to their reasons, it's complete dominance behaviors and regression to status quo, because their reasons are we need discourse, we need interaction, things that can happen online. But the real thing that they're saying is if Parliament goes online, they lose their jobs. Because their jobs are predicated on supporting the status quo, but they won't phrase it that way. It's just incredibly frustrating to see resistance that is feigned when they're really just obscuring self-interested motivations.
Well, they can also be helping their constituents too. That's the other part of their job. It's not just to sit and warm a seat in Parliament Hill. You're elected to serve your constituents, and constituents have never needed your attention more than now. So stay 100%. The hell home and do the thing through electronic means, morons. Who was going to speak there?
So saw like what happened to Boris Johnson. Like the guy contracted COVID-19 and almost fucking died, and he shook hands with everyone and just acted as though, it wouldn't come his way, but it did, and it almost cost the UK one of its leaders. And
not one of its better leaders, but one of its leaders.
What's that? Sorry?
Not one of its better leaders, but one of its leaders.
One of its leaders. I don't think did I say better.
No, you didn't.
It's debatable. But at the end of the day, he's still a world leader, and you want to see him alive, and you want to see him leading his country and doing well. But imagine all these idiots in our country that want to maintain Parliament the same way and have everyone huddle in together, they're just going to put other people at risk. And you know they're going to be shaking hands and doing all this shit. And then next thing you know, you have a pandemic in government and there's people falling off the face of the earth.
Well, you know what? I have it on good authority that the reason that Trump, even though he goes around shaking hands enough, the reason he doesn't have COVID-19 is that COVID-19 had a meeting. And they decided none of them wanted to hang around with Trump for that length of time. another thing that drives me nuts, this ban on single-use plastic bags from, shopping bags. Like, who does anybody here really only use a plastic bag, a shopping bag, once? I mean, I see plastic bags being used to carry all manner of things after the groceries have been delivered. They're very handy things to carry things in. They're handy for cat litter, for scooping up cat litter. They're handy for carrying books. Like
anyone
so many
that's
things.
Had a big dog knows this. Like, you need a fucking full Save-On Foods or superstore size bag to pick up after a Labrador.
If you want to say they don't want to use plastic bags anymore. Because, yes, there is a problem, and yes, there is an area the size of Texas made of plastic in the ocean. Okay, we recognize there's a problem. There is also biodegradable plastic. It's more expensive, but it's there. But don't call it single-use plastic bags, because almost nobody uses a plastic bag once and then throws it away. Almost nobody. They are used for so many things that the idea single-use plastic bag, I don't think those things exist. They're very, very handy. And you know what's not handy? Fucking paper bags.
Paper bags. Fuck.
Paper bags with no fucking handles. You got to curl them underneath your arm. If anything is wet or leaking, the bag will open. There's why can't you make them with handles for the first you know, in the first place. They just fold it over. You have to hold it by that fold. Well, no, it never works, okay? I can, you know, the average person can carry a few plastic bags at once when they're taking in their groceries. You can take basically maybe two paper bags of groceries, and paper bags are not especially useful afterwards unless you're trying to bring back the unknown comic from the Gong Show. Like, paper bags are a piece of shit as far as a solution.
Well, and what frustrates me about this so much is the amount of plastic in the plastic bag is nothing compared to the amount of plastic in the products that you're putting in the bag. Like, you look on the shelves at the shampoos and the food products, and they'll have plastic outers, and they'll have bags inside, like, and the plastic will be thick. Like, that's what's causing the environmental damage, and there is generally no repeated use on that. Like, I'm staring right now at a bottle of vitamins, and I'm seeing thick plastic. Nobody's ever going to use this container, but that's where the environmental damage is coming from, and yet we're focused on the plastic bag that, as Hippie says, people are reusing afterwards. Like, it's complete and total disconnect between the problem, which is environmental damage, and the solution, which banning plastic bags doesn't help with.
No, it's just not a placebo. You know what? Because you get products that where the plastic inside has been shaped specifically to hold that product. You know, it's the packaging, and then you open it up, and then there's various plastic little sheets or trays that are made to hold just that product. You will never use those things again. Those go right into the recycling bin. Those are the real problem, as Aaron's saying, not the plastic bags, which actually do get multiple uses. Now, who tried to speak up there? Was it Hafiz?
It was me.
Oh, Andy, go on.
In California, you know what I love is that they do paper bags, because those things are super duper strong. They last forever. And if you just want to throw them in, if you would do compost waste, you just throw them in, they'll decompose. So there's that.
Did you not hear a thing I just said? Paper bags are a piece of shit. Paper bags do not carry things properly. They are not as convenient, and they have almost no use after you've used them.
The plastic bags in BC are like really super paper thin. So I don't know, but like you go to a Vons or you go to like a Trader Joe's and you got like a big, you know, hefty bag. But I don't know. I always like them. But I was going to say about consumer waste or consumer packaging. I am one of those crazy aunts that will be at the store and I'll right there in the store. As soon as I buy all my stuff, I take everything that's out of the box. Like if it's like a toothpaste, I take it out of the box. I hate consumer packaging, and I'll give it to them. And I'll say, here, can you please recycle this? Because they have, you know, much more volume to recycle everything, and they'll do it properly. So I just do it right there in the store.
The stores, here's the thing. Many stores do not have recycling programs. There are many jurisdictions that do not have recycling programs for commercial enterprises, only for homes. It's been going straight in the garbage. You'd be better off taking it home and putting it in your recycling bin. Most businesses are not provided with recycling. How many times when you drive around the back of a strip mall or a business do you see those big metal bins marked for waste and others for recycling? You don't, because it's not a service that's offered municipally in most places that I know of for businesses. So while your heart was in the right place, you just threw it in the garbage, Andy.
You know what, Aaron? You got to become a green and get all businesses to have to, you know, do recycling. Or God,
he's better off as a conservative doing that, because the businesses will listen to a conservative.
That is true.
That was my thought, Ed. That was my thought.
Yeah, they're a green. They're gonna say, "Fuck you, hippie."
I don't know anything about politics.
No. Oh well, okay. That was obvious. Hafiz, another pet peeve of yours.
You know what? I don't think I really have any off the top of my head right now.
I have one.
Go ahead.
All right. When online help doesn't apply to the problem you're having, you type in the problem you're having, and there's like a YouTube video, and it says that it's going to, here's how to solve this problem for Windows 10 or whatever the hell, and you listen to it, and you're like, you're watching it, and you go through the steps, and it says, and then you press X, and you go to your screen, and it's like, there is no fucking X. The option that they're telling me to press doesn't even exist. And it drives, it's like, why is this? Like, it's very simple. You just click here, go to file, and then click X. It's like, I go to file, and that option isn't even there. And it's like, what are you, is this deliberate psychological torture? This happens all the time. I'm like, okay, I'll try. And it happens even with text, you know, where you read the text and it says, here are the steps to take. So you take the steps, you take maybe 4 steps out of 7 or whatever. And then you get to step 5 and it's like, that option isn't showing up on my screen. It's not even there. You are not helping me. That's one of my pet peeves. The other is, when you sign into a place and you have to type in your password and they won't let you press that little I icon so you can see what you're typing in to make sure you're typing in the right password. Because sometimes, the number of times that I've had to change my password because I wasn't sure if I was typing the wrong password or I was just mistyping it or something, especially I had a keyboard for a while where a keyboard where some of the keys stuck. I didn't know if it was the wrong password or I just typed it in wrong. I can't be trusted to see my own password. You can't give me the option to see what I've typed in as a password. That's your security. No, I can trust. They say, well, people can look over your shoulder. I'll know if someone's looking over my shoulder.
Is everything designed like we permanently have someone looking over our shoulder? Like, I'm on my cell phone. I'm clearly logging into Pornhub. Why do I need a fucking password protector here that can't show me what my password is?
Maybe they're assuming that husbands who have that don't want their wives to be able to hack it and find it or discover what.
Yeah, but chances are she's not over your shoulder watching you as you're entering your password.
Yeah, chances are. Yeah, you're right. If you're going to Pornhub and your wife's standing over your shoulder, she's a participant.
Yes, exactly. Look, and the worst are those passwords that need to be like 12 characters and need to include a number, a capital letter, and some sort of other odd character.
Yeah.
How the fuck are you supposed to remember where that thing is with dots?
Yeah, and also they say, do not use a password you've used before. Well, fuck you. It's my password. And if I want to take that security risk, then I should be able to take it. Screw you. Don't tell me not. You know how many passwords I have? Because, you've used that password before. Yeah, I used it because I like that password. And I probably had to change it only because you wouldn't let me see what I was fucking typing. So
yeah, I work on the assumption that everything I do online and everything I've ever done is available for all to see. And I don't care if I'm judged on it. I assume every email account I have is hacked to the gills. And I just work on the assumption that I need to be able to defend everything I do, no matter how outside the norm. And once you get to that point, for me, at least, it's a little refreshing when you just get to the point where you say, to hell with it. Everything's public. Let come what may.
Ed's problem is that he's typing with a cigar.
I'm not using Andy. I'm not using a cigar.
He's typing with a vape. He has a big ass smock in his mouth, and he's banging it on the keyboard.
Don't you ever accuse me of using a vape? Okay,
I'm vaping right now.
That is
a very douchey thing.
Vapes are very douchey things.
That was good.
Hey Ed, what's vaping for a sock? Febreze.
Ethnic humor, very low. Okay. Anybody else have anything else they want to contribute pet peeve-wise?
No.
This goddamn show, I'm over it. I'm fucking done. I'm out of here.
Oh, Andy, you and your drama. Kidding. I know. And then I don't think a lot of these complaints have been male-specific, but none of our shows are ones that only are intended for men to listen to. So
it's just men explaining everything.
Yeah, women should listen more to men explaining than men in many cases.
I think
because it'll help them figure out what the hell's going on in our heads.
Women should donate too.
Listen, anybody should donate.
More women listeners than male listeners, anyway.
We may, because the way men present themselves to the world. And the way men present themselves on mansplaining, which is much more honest and candid, two different things. And I'm hesitant to push people for a Patreon when a lot of people are suffering.
Well,
you know, they don't have jobs. But if you do have a job and you are secure or you're getting a source of income and you'd like to help us out, we have taken a hit on Patreon because of the people who can't afford to give $5 a month or whatever, or $1 a month or $5 a month. And, you know, if they can't afford money that's that low, I feel badly for them. They're really scraping. So we have been hit by the effects of this, the economic slowdown caused by COVID. We want to keep doing our shows. If you have the wherewithal to be able to contribute, to, you know, become a subscriber, and then you get not just this show, Mensplaining, you get Hey Ladies, you get Broken Clock, you get Matter of Fact, you get Steven and Steven, you get Keeping It Real, which is a great show. You get so many shows. Each one of them takes a different perspective on, sometimes it's the same issue, but a lot of shows on COVID-19, each of them taking a completely different perspective and approach, and ones that you do not see covered in mainstream coverage. So we serve a purpose. So, and you know, we've got good listenership. I know you guys are listening. And if you don't want to subscribe, you don't want to make a commitment, you commitment phobes, a one-time donation at PayPal. So here's the information. Patreon, which is spelled with an E, patreon.com/FUNetworkTV, patreon.com/FUNetworkTV, or at PayPal. You can do it through our email address, which is FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. Listen, FU stands for an attitude, obviously. It also stands for us and for you, because the big, giant, megalopolis media that's out there, that's for them. It's not for us. We're building something for us and for you. So help us keep building that. I think that's it.
Well, you know what? I have to say, women need to step it up right now more than ever, because this shutdown is bad for everyone, but it's especially bad for men. Men are losing $1 for every 79 cents that women are losing. So, honey, women, you got to step it up.
Yeah, step it up. Week. We could actually talk about maybe, this is probably one that Kirzner will host, but during COVID-19, the way that men identify with their jobs and get their value from jobs. So in that case, maybe men are suffering in some ways more than women during this time of mass unemployment. But that's another show altogether, and I won't be part of that one. So I want to thank everyone who participated. Aaron Seal, entrepreneur from Ottawa. What's the name of your company, Aaron?
C-Fusion. Make your own edibles at home.
Okay.
C-Fusion. We need to hear more about this, Aaron. We got to do a whole show on making our own edibles. I think we should all make our own edibles, eat them, and do it during a show.
I would love to put on a chef's hat and teach people. This is what I do.
All right. Very good. Hafiz Narani, who visits Pornhub regularly, is the producer of Mensplaining. He does it. He visits there only for research purposes for this show.
For this show specifically.
Yes, specifically. He wants to understand attitudes that are being promulgated by porn. He is a digital marketing analyst and consultant par excellence in Vancouver. But the way business is being done now, he may as well be in Timbuktu. It's knowledge that matters and expertise, and that can be transferred across the globe like never before. So thank you.
And you know what? Right now, more than ever, it's something that my expertise in online business. I have been coming through for a lot of people, and I know people that have listened to the show have reached out to me. So I'm throwing it out there. If you need help, shoot me a message. My advice is never something that you have to pay for. I'm always there to listen, and I would love to help people out that maybe aren't in the best situation right now. Maybe their business is hurting, and they've never taken that full leap online. Well, let's see if I can give you some steps on how you can get there.
All right, how can they reach you? You're at Feezy Does It on Twitter. Does it. And yes. What else? Is there another way to reach you for business purposes?
You can reach me at my business email, Hafiz, Hafeez, at Bizademy, bizademy@.com.
Okay, thank you. Andy Willis is a dynamic personality who you can hear on the radio if you live in the Vancouver area. If not, you can hear the shows streamed and hear past shows on Andyland. Is it andylandradio.com or andyland.com?
Andylandradio.com.
Andylandradio.com.
Who has andyland.com? And what is it?
It just take that guy down.
No, it's actually kind of a larger story, but yeah. No, andylandradio.com.
Andylandradio.com. He talks about music, pop culture, and continues to be the Andy that we love on this show. So I encourage you to pay attention to that. And that's it. You can find me, Ed the Sock, at Ed the Sock on Twitter. On Facebook, it's edthesock.funetworktv. And on Instagram, ed_the_sock. And yes, I have been doing shows live on Instagram. Sock 5 Live is what we've called it, which means Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I plan to do live Instagram interactive shows. So we'll see how long I keep that up. Then I may move it also to include Facebook and then do a version for YouTube. We'll see. Everybody and their schmuck brother is doing that now. So I don't know that I, you know.
Well, you're our schmuck brother, and we hope you do it too.
All right, well, thank you.
You do it better than anyone else.
All right, well, thank you. All right, this has been Mensplaining here on FU Politics, a division of Fun, the FU Network. I'm Ed the Sock.
For he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow. Let's all say all of us.
This is Fun, the FU Network.